and welcome to the first ever episode of the Service Management Social, a podcast, as the name suggests, focusing on all things service management. Today, I'm joined by an eclectic group of ITSM thought leaders to discuss PR for service management. Why? Well, in short, beyond people, process and tools, a huge component of highly successful service management capability, not only within IT, but across an entire enterprise, is collaboration. But then why would, say, a CFO, a project manager, or even a customer within your organization work with service management if they don't even understand the value it can bring them directly? So here we'll not only talk about just some of the benefits a mature service management capability can bring, we'll also explore ways in which to promote service management within different types of industry. We'll be releasing a series of mini pods throughout the course of this week. So stay tuned to get a fresh perspective and ideas around how you can promote service management within your organization, be it the business, the board, wider IT, or those early on in their IT service careers. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce the panel. Amy Gavin, Head of Service Delivery at the global real estate business Savills. David Barrow, consultant, member of the BCS Service Management and ITAM Specialist Group and Verisum contributor. Rob York, previously Global Director for the SMO at Newell Brands, an American-based multinational FMCG. And Simon Reeves, Associate Director for Service Delivery and Management at the European Bank for Reconstruction and Development. So welcome, guys, and thank you for being part of this discussion today. Just to start, I'd like to ask you all, in layman's terms, what is service management to you? And in today's economy of fast and frequent technology change, how does it play its part? So let's start with you, Rob.
Right. Good afternoon. What does it mean to me? Well, as you said, Chris, people, process, technology. But from my background and my experience, what I've seen is you have to make it real. You've got to bring it tangible. You've got to demonstrate the value. You've got to demonstrate the why. And lots of things occur. You get plenty of opportunities at this. Every day, challenges in service management occur. But it's being able to relate back to whatever level you're talking to, as you said, whether it be that C level, or as I call them, the foot soldiers, the people that really go and put IT right, is joining it all together. And if you can do that, and you take that challenge on, and everybody sees value in it, then we're in a pretty good situation. And that's what I see as important.
Fantastic. And Amy?
For me, service management, I see as very much a business enabler. I think in the past, service management has maybe been seen as a bit bureaucratic, a bit trying to make people jump through hoops to get things done. But I think as time's moved on, it's very much part of enabling the business to function. It's about not just supporting the business in terms of incidents, but it's getting things to market quicker, understanding the needs and making sure that it's fit for use and purpose in terms of IT, whereas I think before it was seen a bit more of just providing the tin. Yeah. And I think service management as well, it always plays a big part in stopping that shadow IT, especially now with the cloud and software as a service out there. A lot of people can go out and pick their own, whereas if you've got strong service management, it prevents that and it makes IT part of the business.
Fantastic. Brilliant. And Simon?
Hello. Thanks again, Chris, for having us as well. I'm really excited for today. For me, service management is the glue, the mesh, which David will probably talk about at points from a Verisum perspective, the glue between the business and IT and our senior stakeholders and the resolve groups and teams that deliver IT on a day-to-day basis. I think on the second question around the modern world, what does it mean in that sense? So I think you've got to ask ourselves if we're actually in the modern world, because most of IT is run on legacy technology. So I think for me, it's a question of how do we operate in the modern world with legacy technology and some real challenges in kind of this consumerist kind of world that the kind of new users and these kind of agile technologies are looking to deploy. So, the mesh, the glue.
Fantastic. And David?
Well, thank you for having me on. And I feel like I've got the fin edge of the wedge there, being last to talk about this, because everybody's put it so well. And at risk of repeating what's been said, it's absolutely true. Service management is an enabler. It's something that works across a business in terms of stimulating how we use information technology to the best ends for that particular business. And talking about the mesh, we get involved in understanding resources, environment, practices, technologies, we can actually dovetail across many aspects of a business. But what's key to us performing well in service management is to make sure that we can deliver real service value to a business and its consumers. And in the modern world, there's, I think Simon's absolutely right, we're often operating on legacy services but delivering digital front ends. And it's up to us to help teams understand how what they do within those two extremes impact the other. And it's up to businesses, you know, up to us to help businesses understand how their strategic decisions impact that. And ultimately, what we're there to do is enable technology, but also enable process through the use of guardrails. And to go to Amy's point, she's absolutely right. Service management traditionally has been seen as pure governance, as something that slows people down. And with the advent of DevOps, the two are often at loggerheads, but actually they can absolutely coexist. And it's how we as ITSMs bring those two areas together amongst the rest of the business that really, for me, is what service management is about.
Fantastic. Brilliant. So there's a bit of a consensus there, which is a promising start. So sort of moving on then and bring up the kind of the first topic we'll be addressing, which is really around some of what you've just mentioned there. So business aligned IT service strategy and architecture. And I suppose I'll kick off with a kind of a statement kind of question, and then it'd be good to kind of hand it over to you guys to discuss it. And you know, I'm sure there'll be, given the different kind of industries you've all operated in, some differences in opinions about how you approach this. So, I mean, businesses are facing new challenges with an emphasis on service, and IT seen as a provider of solutions. IT services are made up of people, process, and technology. So how does IT in today's environment ensure that service architecture and modeling is aligned to meet these requirements? I mean, if we start with Amy, say, working at Savills.
So for me at Savills, we have a business partner relationship. So we have a team of IT business partners. They work very, very closely with the business and they act as that conduit. So it's in terms of making sure that we're understanding their requirements and getting things across as they need. It's also, as again, I think one of the reasons I was focusing on shadow IT is there was a lot of that within our business at one point, and having these partners around to understand what they want and then agree that service modeling and building the right solution for them right from the very beginning has really helped and has been really important. I think they play a very big part in it. And what's really good is that our business partners work very closely alongside myself and my team, ensuring that the service management side is engaged at the very, very beginning.
Okay, fantastic. So, I mean, I suppose you've got something similar at the EBRD, Simon, very much focusing on, I suppose, almost kind of portfolios within the organization and understanding their kind of requirements specifically. I mean, how, given EBRD and the types of personnel within that organization, how have you kind of found that in implementing that kind of service management model? Do you find that you have to take a different approach, or the service managers have to take a different approach given their kind of their stakeholder groups that they're facing off to?
Yeah, I think, I mean, EBRD is not like, it is very similar to all organizations in the sense of the business have the ability to buy things themselves, and they do, and we probably should encourage it. But the job of service management isn't to, and IT isn't to provide all IT services to the business, it's to enable the business to use and procure IT services that are the right services for them. So, I think the first thing to say is IT shouldn't be seen as a provider of solutions. IT should be seen as the enabler, and the provider could be multi-layered. It could be businesses consuming services themselves directly from off-the-tool SaaS products like Trello for collaboration. They can just buy a local enterprise license, but IT should enable them through the correct firewall and security policies and things like that. And where IT are delivering more kind of corporate solutions, then that's where we should be really designing and modeling solutions that apply for the many and for the good of the many. And I think that depends on there are two elements. There is, how do we model ourselves? It depends how it's being built, And then it's how do we model ourselves to run based on how it's going to be run, whether that's CI, CD, waterfall, agile, multiple methodologies. Service management has to cater for all of those. And that's a really difficult job because actually there's no silver bullet to cater for all those different methodologies who are all looking to work differently at different paces with different governance models. Yeah. So I don't think EBRD is a good example of any organization who's struggling with a market that is constantly changing, wants to work differently every other day. And, you know, when small niche providers can provide SaaS products at a much greater speed, let's give the business access, but let's enable them effectively and securely.
Okay, fantastic. Yeah. I suppose, David, given the engagements you have with different types of clients and organizations in different industries as a consultant, do you see there being kind of a one-size-fits-all model? I mean, if you look at, say, the example Simon's given there and how that aligns with Savills, which on paper would seem a very different organization from the outside looking in, do you think that, you know, really it would be quite an easy adoption for most businesses to take that approach?
Well, in terms of what I do, I have a real distinct pleasure and advantage that often I go into a business in my consultancy way and I'm able to ask them a question, which is, where do you actually want to get to? What's your desired state? What are you looking to achieve? Why do you want myself here? Why do you have a certain supplier? What's your technology roadmap? And often there's an answer there, but if you lift that conversation to look holistically, you can start to see light bulbs going off that, oh, actually, yeah, this is aspirational, or maybe this isn't fitting into our actual strategy. And so I don't believe, to answer your question, one size literally fits all, but I believe there are methods that you can use to that are one size approaches that can enable you to find an answer, but that answer will always be different. Especially in any organization that has multiple levels, because there'll be different perceptions of that truth. So if you're speaking at C-level, there'll be a roadmap view of where a business needs to go. If you're speaking at a functional level, there'll be a I need to maintain, run and support this product view, which is vastly different. And that's where the pressure is actually doing that. But in terms of how to start to have that conversation, and Simon alluded to it a moment ago around the management mesh and how I particularly use Verisum, and certainly in my case, and again, how people use Verisum differs. But Verisum, going back to your people, products and technologies, there were the four P's in ITIL previously: people, process, products, partners. Now we've got practices and a service value system in ITIL 4. In Verisum, we have the management mesh, which for me works really well because it's visual. And I'm not here to talk to you about, oh, Verisum's amazing, but in terms of how I use it, Verisum enables you to visually focus on the resources of an organization. So that can be the people, the suppliers, its budget, as an example. You can look at its environment. Environment's so key nowadays. In one engagement, I was working with a business that literally through legislation and consumer need had to change the environment they operate in, because the product that they previously sold was really being outlawed through legislation and people weren't consuming it in certain geographies anymore. So they had to think about, how do we change our business? Which is a really tough approach to take when you've been doing the same thing for over 100 years. Then you've got your management practices, and this goes back to Simon's point, where you might have multiple ways of doing things, DevOps, ITIL, different versions of ITIL. Now, most people employ ITIL, as we've said already, as a governance approach, and maybe they employ it from the book, as opposed to what it was intended for, is a framework that you utilize that best fits your business. And then finally, there's technology. And it is finally, because often technology can be used as the driver for the conversation, and it shouldn't be. Simon was correct again. It's the enabler for the business. So we in IT service management enable all of those things and we bring them together, and then we use that to start making a difference. And I know I've gone on for a little bit, but the other thing I would say, How do we ensure that architecture is aligned to meet requirements? We have to understand the outcomes that are desired of that service or set of services. And that means being close to the consumer, understanding the consumer need. And where service management has really moved on over the last 20 years is our consumers were users of a product that operated within a business. Now our consumers are consumers. If you work in banking, there are people that are using the products you design and you deliver. If you work in real estate, property, it's the same. So we've had to really adopt how we apply service management. Service management itself has had to adopt, but we have to help businesses do that too. And so whilst I think there's a single set of methods to get there, every answer will be different.
Fantastic. Is this the part where I have to highlight that there are the frameworks and working practices available? Is that
absolutely there are other frameworks and working practices available. And I'm as keen on all of them as I am on Verizon.
Brilliant. Rob, given obviously your experience within the kind of FMCG and retail / e-com space more recently, and let's say some of the difficulties or differences rather between the organizations you work for and the differences in, of opinions, let's say, within the same organization at Newell, perhaps, where you've got different regions with different expectations. How did you kind of take your own kind of approach to servicing those different stakeholder types, given their kind of different requirements, although they're all looking for the same kind of outcome at the end?
Yeah, interesting is the word that I often use to describe it. And I was often described as trying to be a politician, probably not mention any of the ones currently. But the situation there is, Chris, that yes, at the end of the day, you're in an organization, we're operating globally, different BUs, different business units. But overall, one organization which had grown through acquisition, trying to leverage commonality for all the things that have been discussed before. And David's point, totally agree with all of those. And as he's going through them, I'm nodding, because the challenge there is that one of the options was to take 23, as it was known, help desks. And that's a terminology that I just really hate, and make it into a service desk and try and explain that concept, because a lot of the business understood through longevity and historically, I've got a chap down the corridor and I can just phone and they just come, or she comes and they just fix things. And then of course, we've going from these legacy sort of historical technologies through to SaaS and everything else and how that changes. So the thing there is being that diplomat is to, the first thing is to listen to the business. And I think as Simon said, and align with what their requirements are or what their pain points are. And then trying to actually come to the table that rather than bringing in traditional governance, AKA people in DevOps, I'll say, can see as red tape, restrictions, holding things back, reasons not to do things and everything else, is to actually bring in more of a safety net. And therefore, again, trying to bring through that value in a more up-to-date way of showing actually what are the challenges in that business at the moment. And FMCG over the last N number of years, there have been a lot of challenges regionally and everything else going on, and trying to demonstrate and build, because the thing to do is gain trust. And I think to be a service value add, you know, there has to be a trust element that you are going to add value to the business. And we're going to come on and talk about that. But being able to talk at that level and get that message and start getting everybody to realize we're all on the same side. We're trying to help. We're trying to take this through, and service management actually is important. It isn't just a help desk. And that's something strove to do and made inroads into. And I think that is even more important today in the current situation than probably it has been before.
Okay, fantastic. Is there anything else that anyone wants to add or kind of discuss on this point specifically? Because I'd say what's nice about what you've all said so far is that there is actually a synergy in thought. So it leads me to thinking, well, actually, yes, you know, you've all worked in different industries, you've all faced off to different stakeholder groups, all with kind of different pain points and expectations as to what great looks like. But in reality, you know, the kind of baseline model is very much around business aligned services and getting close to the business to drive that value. And the more you understand those kind of their objectives and how, not only how they're, you know, enabling them to understand how they're going to get there, but also almost kind of suppose partnering with them during that journey. So through the kind of the pinch points, if you like, of transition, transformation, whatever it may be called, you're not holding their hand, but you're definitely kind of revisiting what their objectives were in the first place and why you're kind of on that journey.
Yeah.
I think there's two things for me. One is the business doesn't care about how we organize ourselves in IT service management. They just want to receive the design of the service that we've built for them. So there are two layers. One is how we organize ourselves, how we organize working in an agile environment with legacy technology, all the things we've discussed with ITIL, with Verism, with SIAM, with DevOps, with DevSecOps, etc. But they're not products the business receives. So we need to take the way we operate and design ourselves and apply it to the tailored products that the business consume. So they're interested in how we take ourselves and, as I said, just align it to the business products. Mm.
I think to that point, Simon, that what I see the analogy I give, and I give a lot of analogies, is how in the 60s, when international travel with flight occurred, and back to the first iteration of jets that could cross the pond, so to speak, that people got on with a similar expectation to today, which is I sit in my seat, I've got my bag, I'm due to land at a certain time, sit back and hopefully I'll get there. And it took slightly longer. The principle's the same, but today the way that happens is very, very different. You know, there's no, the traditional of moving a lever and a wire going down the plane and doing all that has gone. Fuel efficiency, all these things in aviation have moved on. But as a consumer, at the end of the day, I still have a time for departure, I have a time for arrival, and that's my expectation. Yeah. And I'm not really bothered how the plane has changed, and those for a slight fear of flying actually don't want to know how that works. They just want to know it's going to work. And that's true. But the world moves on and becomes more efficient. And it's our job to see how we can improve things. And the default factor, of course, is it used to take X amount of time in the 60s to fly from Heathrow to JFK. Today, it takes less and it's more efficient.
I'd say it's more about the choice of champagne on the flight. But
I'll fly with you.
That's the value that we add.